You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Georgia pine. And there's people on the cross. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning in live this Friday, May 10th, 2019 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And it is Friday. And I suppose TGIF. But I want to get into history a little bit. And a discussion that I had yesterday, a question I was asked, and, you know, a pursuant discussion. But first, the state of affairs in America. I mean, it's always been this way to some degree, but see, my understanding was that we had among us at a certain point, and at least to a certain extent, folks who, I mean, the way that I understand it, and I could be mistaken, I realize that, but the way I understand it, from my limited knowledge of our American history, it's my belief and contention that we had in our midst, I mean, there have always been the wolves and the sheep, so to speak, and you know, the wolves trying to run amidst the flock. I mean, we've talked about on this broadcast how, for example, in Ivy League academia, there's been a very virulent satanic agenda that has always, you know, just kind of a thread that's been operating in Ivy League institutions for a very long time. You know, and there were things that were happening in the mid-19th century in particular, you know, the early part of the mid-19th century forward, really where things started to... Seems like as soon as those folks from the founding era started to pass away, the 1820s, 1830s, right in there, all of a sudden things start to make a marked shift. You know, and I think of John C. Calhoun and his speech at the White House in 1828 at an event commemorating the passing of Jefferson and Adams, I believe, a couple of years earlier. And Calhoun was... He made a blustery states' rights speech, and that seemed to be, in my estimation, at least in hindsight, a harbinger for things to come. And we know, really, since about the 1860s in particular, all hell sort of broke loose. And we've been on a slide ever since then, I'd say. So, but my contention is there were folks in our midst who told us at the, you know, during the American Revolutionary period, if you will, you know, and especially from about, you know, I would say, about the 10-year period, 1764, 65, right in there to about 1776, maybe you go forward to 89, right in that era, that generation or so, there were folks in our midst who were remarkable people, who were extremely well acquainted with the vast majority of recorded history. All of it, thousands of years. Can you imagine today? We're kept busy with today's headlines. It's overwhelming. We're inundated with the so-called news cycle. It's not really a cycle. It just never ends. It's the perpetual inundation, the barrage of propaganda that keeps us guessing in Vladislav Surkov-styled avant-garde theater fashion, which end is up. You know, you see in the headlines... that you know, you see competing narratives in the same headlines oftentimes, or in the same story, you know, the complete polar opposite stories. So we used to have folks who were acquainted with history, real history, and you know, we are all people. We're not robots. So whoever writes the story is going to have a perspective, there will be some element of subjectivity that bleeds into the story no matter what. But that's, I think, aside from propaganda, which is different than information. Propaganda is information that is designed and intended to produce a certain opinion, a certain view on a thing, and even attitudes and actions, as Bernays tells us. That's what propaganda is. The father of modern public relations tells us that's how it works. So sure, there's always a, you know, there might be a bias, you might say, but you know, the most dedicated historian might, by, you know, just by nature of his humanity, so to speak, by the nature that we're all people and we're not robots, there is an element of subjectivity that might bleed in, an element of bias or some kind of preference toward something or other. But that is separate from propaganda. And so we live in an era now where not only is real information, real history, unbiased, unadulterated, something other than propaganda, becoming more and more difficult to come by, which is ironic because isn't this still the information age? And we've seen in 2019 in particular a real crackdown on certain discussions, and that's, to me, that's a Fabian-styled agenda, you know? And it's all of the worst sorts of things all rolled into one. It's all these strategies and tactics that have been identified over time, and in particular, in this case, it's the Fabian strategy combined with the Alinsky strategy of, in this case, for example, isolating the vaccine discussion and attacking it relentlessly to the point that you silence any criticism or opposition and just inundate people and beat them over the head with a message that says, if you don't agree with this and you don't go along, if you don't capitulate and acquiesce to the manipulation and coercion, then you will be ostracized, marginalized, vilified, and probably fined and jailed. That's where we are in America. On yesterday's National Intel Report, John read a story at the end of the broadcast. I want to get back to that in a second, but first I want to start with this. To this point that I'm making, yesterday on the Highwire broadcast on YouTube, Del Bigtree said these words. Go ahead, please.
But you really, you know, as a journalist, one of the things you have to do, it's a lot like, you know, being a lawyer. Lawyers always have to come up with, what's the motive? What would the motive be to lie to the people? Why would there be a motive to put cancer-causing, you know, herbicide all over the plants and then not tell people about it? But I think that, you know, the other breaking story this week shows us where the problem is, and that's in the fact that we now know that the EPA just came forward and is still saying that glyphosate is safe. And a huge write-up in the midst of hundreds of lawsuits lining up, maybe even thousands, multiple lawsuits now paying out, Bobby Kennedy and Brent Wisners and other great lawyers fighting the machine, as it were, in courts to show us that we're being poisoned by this product. Still, the EPA comes forward and says, don't listen to that. Don't listen to the courtrooms. Don't read those internal emails. Don't listen to Kerry Gillum, who's reporting on these internal emails. We still believe glyphosate is safe. You know, when you see that, I mean, you have to ask yourself, why would the EPA lie about that? I mean, why would they continue to put people in harm's way? What would be the motivation? And these are the types of things that make my brain, you know, spin and think, what is going on? It seems so obvious. You're going to get caught red-handed. But look what the EPA is up against. First of all, as, you know, a government regulatory agency, they were supposed to have been looking out for our health. They approved this product. So did the FDA and the CDC. Everyone's been involved in saying this is a great way to raise good crops in America. And now we're going to find out that we're all getting cancer from it. That's very problematic for the government. But also think there's another financial issue. Almost every farmer in America now is spraying glyphosate on their crops. Now, this is an entire livelihood that hangs in the balance should we find out that the soil and the crops have been contaminated with the, you know, persistent use of glyphosate and Roundup. And now think about the fact that one of our great exports is our agricultural exports. So now we want China buying this stuff. We want France buying it. We want England buying it. This is one of our great exports. Well, nobody's going to buy it if we can't prove to the world that glyphosate is actually safe. So you see all of the reasons why government agencies start lying to you and to the world, because it protects multiple facets of how this country is being run. And in many ways, it's just that, you know, they've kicked this can too far down the road to back out now. They're all in. They're going to keep lying to you. Who knows if they start trying to pay off judges or move judges in and out to try and get a different result, because this is going to be really damaging to our entire agricultural culture, the one of our great exports, and one of the things that makes America thrive and making America great again. I mean, that's a great slogan as long as it doesn't involve poisoning us. And so I've said all along, you know, I have friends that are environmentalists. And by the way, while we talk about environmentalism, when you read these articles, one of the arguments being used for glyphosate and the need for it is it's the only way we can grow crops for the, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of people in the world in the future. And by the way, it's more environmental. And when I read this, like, more environmental, what do they mean? It's somehow protecting the environment. They said because the tractors don't have to till the soil when they use glyphosate. They don't have to turn the soil over, and those tractors that are burning fuel as they drive across the farms is, you know, raising the CO2 levels on this planet. I want to say, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're telling me that one lone tractor out there on the range all by itself, you know, the only one you see for 20 miles, and then there's another one, that driving, that fuel burning into the air is actually affecting our CO2, couldn't have anything to do with the smokestacks pouring from industry all over the country, or cars lined up in Los Angeles just parked on highways, and in Austin, Texas, and every major city we find ourselves in. That, I believe, definitely is contributing to CO2. But a tractor driving by itself on a farm, I mean, come on, to the environmentalists out there, do you see how stupid they think you are? They think, oh, well, it's going to stop global warming if we poison our food, so we just got to do it. This is insane, folks, and it's a terrible argument, but they'll try anything to sell you on it. The point being, though, and I was going to say this, and I've said it before, my friends all say, oh, we're terrified Donald Trump's going to destroy, you know, obliterate our regulatory agencies. Well, when the EPA is, you know, has people from Exxon and Monsanto working inside of it, and the FDA has people from Monsanto and Merck and Pfizer working in there, and Bayer, and the CDC is a revolving door between Pfizer and Sanofi Aventis and Merck and their scientific bodies, you don't have regulatory agencies. You have bold-faced propaganda machines that are selling you something that you don't want. And we've got to stop this faith, this blind faith in our government, in science, because it's not science. Just because the EPA says it's so does not make it science. Just because the CDC says it's safe does not mean it's safe. Just because the FDA approved it doesn't mean you should use it. This is what we are trying to discuss on the high wire all the time. You have got to recognize you are on your own. This is the Wild West here. There's no sheriff to trust. There's no one watching your back. There's no one watching your farm or your food or your kids except you. You got to start reading yourself. And so we ask ourselves, you know, obviously, luckily, we can sue Monsanto. We have lawsuits that are bringing us the truth, and we're going to continue to show you the truth. But what else is being approved right now? What else by the FDA or the CDC or the EPA? What's in the pipeline that's going to be the future glyphosate? What's the next thing out there that's going to poison us? Is there any chance it could be, I don't know, Frankenfish?
The FDA lifting a ban now on genetically modified.
If possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting Truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back.
Beyond your latest
interesting discussion. We'll get around to, you know, James Baldwin wrote, "What passes for identity in America is a series of myths about once heroic ancestors." Speaking of the heroification that I mentioned during Renee in North Carolina's call yesterday. We'll get back around to the Civil War stuff. So we heard Del Bigtree articulate the issue that, you know, see, people are not asking their own questions. And like he said, you know, everyone needs to be reading for themselves. There's no sheriff to call or you know, and we're led to believe, isn't it interesting that the same folks who want you to believe that the science is settled, so to speak, on every discussion you know, are the same folks who are colluding and conspiring essentially with regulatory agencies. And that's a fraud. I've gone through that over the years. We've been warned for decades. You know, the biggest illustration of that, in my humble estimation, is two things, and I don't want to get sidetracked on this, but the third house versus the third house of Congress versus the fourth branch of government by James P. Hill. What in the world is that? Third house, fourth branch, what? What is that? And James P. Hill's article back in 1986 was published in the John Marshall Law Review, not some conspiracy blog. That was 1986. The third house of Congress versus the fourth branch of government, the impact of congressional committee staff on agency regulatory decision making. And in it, he opened with the words, this article presents a simple yet unsettling proposition. This is 1986, regulatory decision making, and it wasn't a new discussion then. It was about a 50-year-old discussion then. Regulatory decision making, among the most intrusive and pervasive aspects of federal activity, is largely the product of two politically unaccountable bureaucracies, unelected congressional committee staffs and unelected regulatory agency officials. You know, how many people read the Federal Register every day? Ralph Winterode has been telling us for years that, you know, what happens in the Federal Register, first of all, they promulgate, you know, agencies colluding and conspiring, they promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law. What in the heck does any of that mean? Promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law. Doesn't that just sound like a magic trick? Who's reading it? And yet, if we're not reading it, if we're not all reading it, then what's published is presumed to have the force and effect of law after 30, 60, 90 days. Who's keeping up with all that stuff? And that is abuse and usurpation. You know, you have, I mean, I've mentioned the echoes of history. The, you know, Madison, for example, on the sagacious and moneyed few who benefit from the harvest, right, of government regulations. And he said the internal effects of a mutable policy, that's the Federal Register, are still more calamitous. It poisons the blessings of liberty itself. It will be of little avail that the laws are made by men of their own choice if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood. If they be repealed or revised before they are promulgated, or undergo such incessant changes that no man who knows what the law is today can guess what it will be tomorrow. Madison went on in Federalist number 62, he wrote, "Law is defined to be a rule of action, but how can that be a rule which is little known and less fixed?" You know? So, unelected congressional committee staff and unelected regulatory agency officials comprise these two politically unaccountable bureaucracies, James P. Hill wrote. Both of these bureaucracies have developed outside the constitutional framework. Modern regulatory decision-making, therefore, is the result of not of formal directives or interactions between the regulators and their constitutionally elected masters. Instead, modern regulatory decision-making is the result of only informal negotiations between the unelected congressional committee staff members and the unelected regulatory agency officials. And I've talked about the recent 60 Minutes piece where 60 Minutes told us that through the opioid crisis, for example, industry folks were colluding through liaisons with regulatory officials. And that's a counterpart to this discussion. We'll talk more and we'll go to the phones when we come back. Stick around. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle humps, ready to race to you. These days are
Welcome back. Now, just to conclude here, I want to finish these two things, and then we'll go to the phones real fast. So, to conclude this point, James P. Hill told us how this works. You know, people don't understand that there is a scheme that has been erected, if you will, that really has usurped and overarches the constitutional Republican form of government that we were given, a republic, if you can keep it. And it's just, it's operating every day right out in plain sight. And there is the illusion of something or other that has some kind of oversight or control. And really, you know, these, there are folks, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into who's who per se, but there are designing, you know, cunning, ambitious, unprincipled folks, as Washington put it. And they have, you know, over time, they have created a scheme that really operates with unbounded licentiousness, you might say, largely unaccountable. And without really any oversight. And actually, what's worse, you know, these regulatory agencies, so-called, are actually operating in support and defense of industry. And this gets into all of the other things that we've talked about. It's not capitalism per se. It's more a brand of Fordism. It incorporates socialism when it's convenient. It incorporates fascism when it's convenient. But it is monopolistic in nature. And it is not intended for your benefit or my benefit. It is designed entirely for the benefit of a coterie of folks, you know, a club, the club that George Carlin was talking about, for instance. And so the entire structure of government has really been hijacked and conscripted to this devil's errand. So the way James P. Hill wrote about it, these bureaucracies, unelected congressional committee staff and unelected regulatory agency officials, comprise these two politically unaccountable bureaucracies. And I'm just trying to make the point briefly as we move on in the discussion. This is not, I'm not talking about Bigfoot or unicorns or pots of gold at the end of rainbows. This is not imaginary stuff. This is how things really work. This is how things really operate. And Del Bigtree yesterday told folks in very unequivocal terms what everyone needs to be shaken. Most people, I mean, most of this listening audience aside, you know, most of America and many other folks need to apparently be shaken into consciousness with the words that, I don't know, to some might sound alarmist, but, you know, like Del Bigtree said, there's no sheriff to trust. There's no one watching your back. There's no one watching your farm or your food or your kids except you. You have to start reading yourself. You have to. And this is a point that echoes what I've been saying lately, the fact that there is no one who has a greater obligation or a fiduciary responsibility, if you will, to you and your well-being, to you know, each of us, to ourselves and to our posterity, than we ourselves. Yet we've been convinced through this subtle, you know, these subtle tactics of manipulation and coercion and propaganda, social engineering, that we should trust the nanny, we should trust some bureaucrat far away, when actually that is anathema to our history, which gets back to where we're headed. So James P. Hill says unaccountable or unelected regulatory agency officials and unelected congressional committee staff, they're working together. When a law is passed, they work together. Both of these bureaucracies, he wrote, have developed outside the constitutional framework, a construct largely of the early 20th century progressive era architects. Modern regulatory decision-making, therefore, James P. Hill wrote, is not the result of formal directives or interactions between the regulators and their constitutionally elected masters. You understand? That means that this is... It is irrelevant who's voting for whom then. Modern regulatory decision-making, therefore, is not the result of formal directives or interactions between the regulators and their constitutionally elected masters. Instead, modern regulatory decision-making is the result of only informal negotiations. Informal negotiations. And you might as well include influence there, right? Because who's getting greased throughout the process of informal negotiations? Well, who would do such a thing? Well, think about it. If you are in, for example, one of the regulatory agencies that needs to approve a thing, and you're part of the congressional committee staff or something, and you have a charity or a thing or some pet interest or cause, and there is a donation of 10, 100,000, whatever, you know, when the windfall that comes as a result of those greasings is in the billions, and history tells us this happens. I mean, one of the biggest examples that I always go to is the debt retirement party from the New York Times article back in 1982, which predates the article by James P. Hill that I'm reading. Debt retirement party becoming an institution. That was 1982. What's a debt retirement party? Well, as a freshman congressman on Capitol Hill, you might have some debts. You might have a house. You might have a mortgage. You might have some car payments. Your kids might be in school. You might have a pet cause. So we throw a party for you when you show up on Capitol Hill, and you throw your notes, your mortgage, your car payment, your kids' college bill. You throw all that stuff on the table in a big pile, and then we auction off the payments. In other words, you know, special interests buy you for pennies on the dollar. And it was an old story in 1982. November 29, 1982, debt retirement party becoming an institution. And this is, by the way, exactly what Andrew Jackson said would happen. I won't go there. You know, we'll save that right now. Anyway, modern regulatory decision-making is the result of only informal negotiations between the unelected congressional committee staff members and the unelected regulatory agency officials. And then James P. Hill wrote, by largely ignoring the significant role that congressional committee staff members play in influencing the process and product of regulatory decision-making, reformers proposing formal changes. You know what? We just need to get the 435, the 535, the 544, whatever. We just need to just vote the rascals out. Ah. But James P. Hill reminds us, by largely ignoring the significant role that congressional committee staff members play in influencing the process and product of regulatory decision-making. What does that mean, that coming next? Reformers proposing formal changes, vote the rascals out. That's the formal change. In the rulemaking process, risk overlooking the need for simultaneous exploration of informal reforms. And a companion, a parallel of this discussion is, of course, the regulatory agencies that have become, instead of, if they were ever, I would say the operative term is ostensible, if they were ever, truly ever, at any point, agencies that were there. And again, let's not conflate terms. I'm not talking about people who have good intentions, who show up to do good things and protect their fellow man. There are those people. But agencies are created. You know, listening to Del Bigtree, he needs to, and all of the people, you know, having these discussions, go back and just simply read the Reese Committee congressional proceedings. Read the testimony. Read all of the government agencies, the independent administrative agencies that grew out of the early 20th century progressive era. Read about all of them. National Science Foundation, all of these progressive and socialist, many of them just openly socialist in what they were originally titled. Read about all of these government agencies that grew out of those early years, including things like the National Institutes of Health, which was from its earliest beginnings a eugenics operation, a front group for special interests. So if any of these agencies, FDA, CDC, EPA, have ever at any point been anything other than front groups, they have certainly been conscripted to the devil's errand at this point. I would say entirely, effectively. There are folks, you know, what about William Thompson? Yes, there are folks. But that's the minority. And I'm just saying this is how it works. This is how this machine works at this point. And we need to understand this. We need to understand how, just matter of fact, black and white this is. It's just this simple. You know, again, Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page, speaking of the article that John read yesterday by John W. Whitehead, founder of the Rutherford Institute, he alludes to the study, you know, the 2014 study by Gillens and Page, testing theories of American politics, elites, interest groups, and average citizens, where they wrote, multivariate analysis indicates that economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while average citizens and mass-based interest groups have little or no independent influence. And there are folks who want to challenge these assertions and say, well, you know, I mean, that's just, you're being a little sensational there. I mean, it's still America, you know, government of, by, and for the people. And to those, I would ask, how many of your elected representatives, so-called, were you personal friends with before you voted for them? If you even voted for them. That's a whole separate issue. How many more are you friends with now? How many have you met with, as I've said in the past, in just, you know, outside of the auspices of political opportunism, if you know what I mean? You know, not kissing hands and shaking babies, so to speak. Yes, I meant that. Anyway, how many pieces of legislation have you or anyone you know ever written? How many of those have gotten adopted? You know, the only person that I could say that I don't know him personally, but I remember when Jay Inslee was doing stuff, you know. But really, nobody I know has ever written legislation. Did you found an ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, where we all get together and with our special interests, we have a group of lawyers basically on retainer who write laws for us, and then when the law gets written, then we get back to what James P. Hill wrote, which we'll get to in a second. So, two other questions. Exactly which laws? You know, laws, feudalist administrative fourth branch regulations, because after all, the agencies promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law. But which laws, especially those most recently enacted, do you point to as making you and your family safer and life better? Last question. If none of the preceding questions were met with an affirmative answer, then how can anyone reasonably define what passes off as representative government in America as a government of, by, and for the people? We need to define terms. Which people? Apparently not all people are created equal in this context. And it's surprising how misled we are as to who's persecuting whom, which is sort of what we touched on yesterday. Anyway, yeah, we don't really have time, but you know, the one of the best recent examples, and there have been numerous in the congressional record throughout the 20th century in particular, there were several, and we've talked about those over time, but Congressman Greg Walden, back in 2016, on the heels of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupation situation, remember when he was in Congress talking about a law that he wrote. I wrote the law, BLM, you know, and so he writes the law. He as he said during that testimony, I wrote the law. I knew what the spirit – usually we have to go back and say, okay, what was the spirit of the law when there's some kind of a contention? And I knew in this case because I was the co-author of the law, he said. And yet the BLM had completely flipped it on its head. They wrote a law that was supposed to put BLM on the hook for fencing, and the BLM – through the process that James P. Hill articulated back in 1986, flipped it entirely and tried to put the ranchers on the hook for fencing, and including punitive action if the ranchers didn't comply. This is what's really happening in America, regardless of who's elected. Be right back.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix a problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Welcome back. So hopefully this makes sense. You know, it's interesting how when you start to unpack something, how just it just feels like it just becomes, you know, voluminous and almost unwieldy quickly. But this is how things really work. People need to understand. And, you know, John read John W. Whitehead's article yesterday, D is for a dictatorship disguised as a democracy, which is a brilliant article. It goes through the, you know, A to Z on what is actually happening, how things actually work. And, you know, the way that Whitehead put it in his article, in the interest of liberty and truth, here's an A to Z primer. Primer is probably the operative word here, to spell out the grim realities of life in the American police state that no one is talking about anymore. Well, you know, and again, this, you know, I would say I validate his point there. Definitely validate his point. No one is talking about. I mean, it's not a widespread discussion. It's certainly not as widespread as it should be. But, you know, again, to yesterday's broadcast and others recently, the relentless gaslighting has most of us questioning our sanity, and as a result, often retreating to self-doubt. Is anyone else seeing this? Because I must be crazy because I don't hear a widespread discussion. The fact that you can have a commercial for a product and then right after that have a class action lawsuit advertisement, if you or someone you know, and then you can see, as Del Bigtree was talking about, for example, with Roundup, then the EPA comes out and says, nah, it's fine. Thousands of outstanding lawsuits. Thousands. Not a few. Not 10. Not 100. Thousands. Approaching 10,000 outstanding lawsuits. And the EPA says it's safe. This is insane. This would make any reasonable person question their sanity to see these things, I believe. How could you not see this information? Here's a commercial for a product that is injuring and killing people, a class action lawsuit commercial right after that, and then the EPA says it's perfectly safe, while 10,000, nearly 10,000 lawsuits are outstanding. Does that not just sound insane? So in the specter of the relentless gaslighting, no wonder people question their sanity and retreat to self-doubt. And obviously that has the sort of learned helplessness effect of silencing opposition when you don't have the bully pulpit from which to shout. But I'm here to tell you, you're not crazy if you see this. In fact, you're perfectly sane. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.